This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
In the news this month, stellar cannibalism in globular clusters, the role of magnetic fields in gamma ray bursts, and first observational evidence of a new type of supernova. Globular clusters contain some of the oldest known stars, formed billions of years ago in the halos of what eventually became the galaxies we see today. Globular clusters are roughly spherical collections of stars bound together by their own gravity. Our own Milky Way contains many such clusters, several of which were catalogued by Charles Messier in the 18th century. While most of the stars in globular clusters have ages of 12 to 13 billion years, some of them appear to be much younger. Most stars in globular clusters are reddish in colour, but there are some which appear bluer, as if they were much younger. Because they appear to have been left behind by the general evolution of the rest of the stars in the cluster, many of which have already evolved into red giants, this population of stars is known as the blue stragglers. First identified in the 1950s, these peculiar stars appear to regress from old age back to a more youthful appearance, gaining a second lease of life, but there is more than one theory that explains this phenomenon. In research published in Nature on Christmas Eve, two teams describe observations that provide important clues that may explain the process. One team, led by Francesco Ferraro at the University of Bologna, used the Hubble Space Telescope to examine the stars in the globular cluster M30. What they found was that the blue stragglers in this tightly bound cluster are, on average, more massive than the rest of the stars in the cluster, and actually comprise two distinct populations, suggesting that they formed in two different ways. One method is via stellar collisions. Globular clusters are very dense objects where stars are comparatively closely packed, especially near the centre, so collisions between stars are far more likely than they are in the more sparsely populated region of space where our own sun exists. A collision between two stars would result in the creation of a much more massive star, with plenty of fuel being drawn into the star's core, effectively regenerating it. Collisions are not the entire picture, however. Another way to rejuvenate a star is by mass transfer. Many stars do not exist in isolation like the Sun, but in binary or multiple systems. In a binary system, where one star reaches the red giant phase and begins expanding, some of the material can be drawn onto the surface of the companion star, if they are close enough together. When this happens, more fuel is available for the second star, allowing it to burn bluer for longer, and the end result is a blue straggler with a white dwarf companion, the endpoint of stellar evolution for a red giant. In the second paper published in the same issue of Nature, two researchers from the University of Wisconsin-Madison examined the population of blue stragglers in the less dense open cluster, NGC 188. Open clusters are much less dense than globular clusters, and their stellar populations generally have a younger average age than those of globular clusters. What they found in NGC 188 was that 16 of the cluster's 21 blue stragglers are in binary systems with white dwarf companions, three times as many as was expected based on the numbers of normal stars found in binary systems. Together, these results show a consistent picture, where in the less dense open clusters, blue stragglers form mainly through accretion from a companion star, while in the denser environment of a globular cluster, where collisions between stars are far more likely, blue stragglers form via both mechanisms. Gamma ray bursts are highly energetic explosions which release enormous amounts of energy in just a few seconds. So-called because they were first discovered through their intense gamma-ray emission, these explosions can be seen across the visible universe. The exact nature of the jets which give rise to this emission is, however, not certain. Different jet models predict very different properties of the magnetic fields present in the outflowing material. Some models suggest that weak magnetic fields are present only locally within parts of the jet where they are created by shockwaves, while other models suggest that large-scale magnetic fields are generated by the central engine itself, and help to both accelerate and collimate the jets. While the Earth's magnetic field is not particularly strong, it is easy to detect with a simple compass. Detecting the strength and location of magnetic fields in an object many millions of light-years away is much, much harder, so determining which model is correct is not straightforward. Luckily, magnetic fields affect electromagnetic radiation, so the strength of the magnetic field can be inferred from the polarization of a signal. The presence of a large-scale magnetic field would result in the oscillation of the electric field of an electromagnetic wave having a preferred orientation. Objects which emit light randomly have no preferred orientation of this field and are said to be unpolarized, so measuring how polarized the light is can tell you something about the strength and extent of the magnetic field in the object which generated the emission. Using a new instrument designed to measure the polarisation of visible light, a team led by Ian Steele at Liverpool John Moores University have measured the polarisation of the emission from the gamma-ray burst known as GRB-090102, first detected by the SWIFT satellite on the 2nd of January 2009. Because the emission from these objects is so short-lived, ground-based observations are best done by robotic telescopes, which can respond rapidly to alerts from gamma-ray satellites such as SWIFT. In this case, the optical observations were made with the Liverpool telescope, a 2-metre robotic optical telescope located in the Canary Islands. What the team found from their observations is that the light coming from the GRB in the first few minutes after the initial explosion was about 10% polarised, which suggests that large-scale magnetic fields are present in the jets. A polarisation of 10% is quite high for an astronomical object. If the magnetic fields in the jet were only present locally in shock fronts, then the overall polarisation would cancel out or be very small. The presence of such a high level of polarisation provides support to the idea that large-scale fields are present and have a great effect on the nature and dynamics of the outflows from a gamma-ray burst explosion. Stars the size and mass of our Sun end their lives by first expanding as red giants, then shrinking to white dwarfs. Stars heavier than this, however, come to a much more violent end. For stars with masses between about 10 and 100 times that of the Sun, they continue fusing hydrogen to form helium in the core until they run out of hydrogen. They then begin to fuse the helium nuclei together to form heavier elements such as carbon, nitrogen, and oxygen. This carries on through the elements until iron, at which point the core collapses to form either a neutron star or a black hole, and the outer layers are expelled in a giant explosion known as a supernova. For stars heavier than 140 times the mass of the Sun, theory suggests that there may be another mechanism causing the explosion. Counterbalancing gravity inside a star is radiation pressure, the force of the photons themselves, which helps stop a star collapsing under its own gravitational pull. In very massive stars, when the temperature rises above 1 billion Kelvin, these photons can undergo a process known as pair production, where they create an electron and its antiparticle, a positron. This reduces the number of photons in the star, reducing the radiation pressure and, if it happens on a large enough scale, allowing the star to begin collapsing. The result is the ignition of oxygen in the core, and the end of the star in what is known as a pair instability supernova. Models of this type of supernova are fairly robust, but have never been confirmed observationally. But now, a team led by Avishai Galyam at the Weizmann Institute of Science in Israel have discovered the first evidence of such an explosion taking place. They observed the supernova known as SN2007BI and compared their observations with predictions from models of pair instability supernovae. The data fit the models very well, providing the first clear evidence of this type of explosion. Stars this size and much larger are thought to have been common in the early evolution of the universe, contributing significantly to the chemical evolution of the early galaxies. So confirmation of the models is an important step in understanding how the universe came to be the way we see it today. And finally, the International Year of Astronomy officially comes to an end on January the 9th and 10th, with a closing ceremony held in Padua, Italy. 2009 saw thousands of individuals in over 148 countries get involved in taking astronomy out to the public in countless events happening around the planet, all celebrating 400 years since Galileo first turned a telescope to the sky. Amongst other events, numerous public star parties and viewing nights were held, many professional observatories hosted open days for the public, and many major projects were initiated, several of which will continue on in the years to come. The anniversary year may be coming to an end, but the cooperation will continue through the IYA Legacy Programme beyond IYA 2009, which will aim to sustain the networks, activities and innovative concepts for education and public outreach in astronomy which have been so successful throughout the year.